Welcome back to Deep Thoughts, ladies and gentlemen. So I light this stick here. There's a Fuente Grand Reserve. Okay, so I had a comment on YouTube, which I was kind of shocked that I hadn't thought of this idea first. And then after researching, I was like, oh boy, this is going to be tougher than the quantum computing episode. But as you can see, this episode's about cold fusion. What's interesting about this story, before we get into the minutia, because it's not going to take us a tremendous amount of time to explain generally what the discovery was in the late 80s, at least the last time this was discovered above board. It is a story worth reviewing. Almost everyone has heard of cold fusion. It used to be a programming language in the on the internet by Macromedia. We're not talking about that one. We're talking about the ability to create a chemical reaction that causes, well, it is based on the principles of fusion, such that we can have free energy, theoretically speaking. However, I want to sort of preface this that there definitely is a situation where two gentlemen apparently came up with the chemical indication, aka reaction, that they were looking for. When this happened, just like we see today, but they weren't as educated, or at least the masses weren't as educated back in the past. This engine, this media engine, this scientific engine showed up to crush these guys. Now, depending on where you are in science, depending on what side of the fence you're on, you'll disagree with that. You'll think, oh, no, no, no. They're just like the Hutchinson guy who could never account for what he was able to do, tying things to strings and moving them in front of cameras. I will tell you there's going to be a similarity between the hassle that the Wright brothers had trying to register their flying vehicle in 1903. I was very sentient in 1989 and extremely involved with the scientific community from an official science standpoint when this thing pops in 1989. Again, subscribe to every periodical out there, ingesting books, although the books didn't have anything dead on because this was such cutting-edge research. We need to remember before we go into this whole thing that there is definitely a control apparatus on mankind when it comes to energy. For any of you who want to see my episode on energy, which is in season one, it was banned from YT. I don't know if it's in the remastered season one, but it's definitely on the Rumble channel. So go take a look. In the first 5 minutes, I hit you with the only thing you need to know, probably the first 30 seconds after I talk about the fact that my backyard at the time in 2015, September, was being cut up. But none of us have chosen any of the energy sources that we consume, meaning we didn't choose nuclear. We didn't choose oil, aka petrol, gasoline of any kind. We didn't choose those. We didn't even choose the windmills and the solar panels. All of this is being selected for you to make sure that you can pay for every unit of power generated by other people that control you. You should also know before we get into this that there has been a pretty conclusive correlation between the availability of energy to mankind and population growth. It allows us to move around, it allows us to build, it allows us to create luxuries. Each thing resulting back into having children with the freedom to do so. So from the early 1800s, when oil was finally being turned into various gasolines and fuels, as the oil industry grew, the use of oil grew, the curve that goes up is exactly the same shape as the curve of population. Because of that, we have this carbon taxation thing coming down where they're going to sanction energy using bullshit excuses. It's all for controlling how many people are on this planet. If you're rich, you're going to be able to get carbon credits through Al Gore's Blood and Gore CCX, Climate Change Exchange. And if you're poor, well, you can have one kid. So your wife and you, or your husband and you, can have one child, and you won't be able to afford the second one. If you need money fast, you're probably going to sell your credits to stay alive, and you won't have any credits to have a child. It'll be illegal. That's what that's all about. So when these two gentlemen create the or discover this indication within the University of Utah, bells and whistles go off in the world at levels that most laymen don't understand. And the people that pick up the telephones with those bells inside them go into the plan of, okay, these gentlemen have to be stopped. I used to sit down at breakfast with this dude in my area, who was an extremely wealthy guy. His cousin ran one of the, well, ran the most powerful alphabet agency in the United States back in the 80s, his cousin. And I asked him about this, and he said, you know, well, you know, what happens is about every year somebody comes up with one of many formulas that we know creates free energy, or the equivalent thereof. We put our eyes on them. We try intimidation sometimes. We think that's going to work. If they can, you know, they watch the guy, maybe he walks away from it. No problem. Don't need to do anything crazy. A lot of times they incubate it up to some sort of invention that needs investors. And then when they ask for money, they die. And he said they either die coming to us or they die going home, because they usually build some vehicle where they want to show us an invention and they want to bring it to us. They can't put it on a plane, so they travel with it because it's too secret to put in shipping. Because it's just this amazing engine that just keeps running. And then whatever investment firm identifies this individual and gets the job done, gets rid of that source, they get little benefits in the world. That's what this dude told me. He owned an investment firm that sold for $500 million. This guy. So cold fusion. Now, the actual experiment is very uneventful. It isn't like a CERN Hadron Collider where you can envision all this crazy wild stuff happening. As a matter of fact, this invention is so teeny tiny, it would be very anticlimactic if I pointed you at it and said, there it is. This is where all the magic happened. You wouldn't believe me if I showed you the device. So it has to do with a guy named Fleischman and a guy named Pons, who end up working with Dr. Stephen Jones, which, if any of you remember the September 11th dude, who basically was out looking for a thermate and thermite, he worked at Brigham Young University and got involved with this whole thing. He was engaging in a different research, which is similar to cold fusion, which is a muon fusion technique. It's a little bit different and more well-known, but not quite as clandestine and stupendous as this technology that's been hidden for years, which would be cold fusion. So what is fusion? For those of you still going, okay, I heard it a lot. What the hell are you talking about? Well, those of you who saw Back to the Future, remember at the end of the movie, of the first movie, and hopefully you've seen the movie and this is not a spoiler, cover your ears for 60 seconds if you don't want to have something spoiled. When Doc returns back with the time machine and, was that Artie? Or no, is that right? Yeah, Marty is with the chick, his girlfriend, because he put her on the porch. And the Doc comes back and he says, you guys got to come with me because the whole future is different. And he runs behind and he opens up this container because he has to have energy to make that unit work. And he's putting all kinds of stuff in the back of this engine, including just basically trash, banana peels, trash, all kinds of stuff. And this thing looks like a coffee maker, right? It says something fusion on the side. It's just brilliantly done, right? What that represented was the ultimate definition of what we want to be able to do with a fusion engine. It is to take atomic matter of one size and shape and turn it into another size and shape of something that can be then burned or turned into some sort of energy and make a combustible to do something within the vehicle. So a banana peel, you could hot light a match to it, and it's not going to do anything but just burn, right? But imagine you could turn a banana peel into hydrogen, helium, whatever the hell will power your unit. Hydrogen's great because it turns into steam when it's done, right? When it annihilates itself, right? Now, we know that fusion happens at extreme temperatures. That's a normal thing. When an atomic bomb goes off, that's fission reaction, where an atom supposedly splits another atom, splits another atom, splits another atom. And I understand we're going to get into alternate definitions of atoms after we get through the main cold fusion information. But it's still the same truth. It is still a atomic body obliterating itself, unraveling, and the acceleration of that releases so much energy that it obliterates its neighbors, and you get this reaction. Okay. The reason why it happens at high temperatures, like the surface of the sun, is the fusion reaction, is that it is so hot that it actually can reconstruct atomic matter, the orbits of what I call ethereal orbits, okay? The dielectric and magnetic waves that create electromagnetism are just shattered because there's so much movement in the fabric of the universe that things get to be blown apart and recombined. When you have base components that are being blown apart and recombined, then you have hydrogen and carbon, the two most common things in the universe. Carbon acts like a binder, and hydrogen is just a propellant. The sun being largely hydrogen and helium, both flammable. And those are the base components that are being blown apart and reassembled and blown apart and reassembled. But it takes a lot of heat. And why is heat the big thing? Because heat is always agitation. It's always the movement of particles makes heat. When you rub your hands together, the reason why it gets hot is that you're creating an agitation. Fire is always moving, right? Ice is always a crystallized, still body of orbits. Therefore, it's cold. Now, cold fusion is considered an experiment of chemistry, which may not be an intuitive classification or category of science for you to think about this experiment occurring. What they were trying to do, and what we believe they successfully accomplished, this Fleischmann and Pons, was that they were able to put together a configuration of metals and chemicals inside this electrolyte cell, which I'm going to explain all this stuff, and they were able to get the heat inside this little tiny test tube. And I mean to tell you, if you had a glass from your kitchen, even a small glass from your kitchen, those little half glasses, maybe a half glass would be about the size of this chamber that they were using to create this experiment. But if you had a full glass, just an empty full glass, you have an object that's like probably twice the size of the object that they used to get this indication that they reported to the world. So this is an experiment that's going on in this tiny little container. You can see pictures of it online. So what makes an atomic body one thing and an atomic body something else? Well, official science talks about the components of an atom: electron, neutron, proton, right? Hydrogen atom being the most simple one. There's just three little pieces, one of each. Well, the second you start adding more neutrons, protons, and electrons, you start creating different things. So gold is different when you look at it really close than silver. There's more things in orbit. Now again, I don't believe that there's, technically speaking, any particle besides an ethereal particle, but it doesn't matter. The way the ether behaves is what we call an electron, neutron, and proton, and every other subatomic particle that's out there. So what they're trying to do is say, okay, at either near or room temperature, they're trying to create a chemical relationship between metals and chemicals suspended in water to exchange and adopt new atomic orbits, to perhaps take one off of one of the chemical elements that they're dealing with and add it to another at room temperature, simply because the orbital relationships between the two atoms are so similar or become compatible when you apply electrical current, that you can actually cause something that's non-combustible to be combustible. So maybe even reducing something down to hydrogen or helium, something that actually will catch on fire. Because then you can burn it, turn a turbine, and you'll have power, an AC motor especially. Technically speaking, if we still had steam trains and steamboats and steam cars or something like, was it North Korea's, as wood-burning furnace trucks because they don't have any fuel, but they got nuclear weapons. Seriously. It would work for that too, to be honest. Now, perhaps in the past, okay, through just sheer serendipity, experimentation over and over and over by thousands of human beings doing millions of experiments, man probably ran into this little indication at some point. There is a little gotcha, though, with what ended up happening on this particular experiment. So the way this works is that you have this electrolyte cell. What that is just it's like a beaker, a container, it could be a test tube. You can build it at all different thresholds. It's like you could build a transformer at all different sizes. It just depends on what you're trying to power, right? Ask anyone who builds neon signs or Tesla coils. They determine how big they want the Tesla hair to come off the top. They got to get a different power transformer. Same thing here. Whatever they encapsulate in this container, everything else has to be proportioned to it to get this reaction. So what an electrolyte cell does is it actually has a rod, an electrode, that comes down inside the center, and then one that goes along the outer edge. Now, how many times have you heard that electricity moves from positive to negative? That's what we call anode theory. That is not correct. The real correct way that power moves is a cathode technique. That's exactly how electricity flows, negative to positive. Now, at the same time, there's electrons going back the other way. But in general, you're taught the opposite of how electricity works. It's just a weird thing, right? For instance, when you're taught laser technology, you're typically taught it in a cathode paradigm. When you learn LED technology, you're learning everything in an anode technology. Weird. Why not learn it the right way? But this electrode has to be made out of something that's conductive, because they're going to run a little bit of voltage down the center. There's going to be a fluid in there. And the thing is you can put all kinds of fluid in there. Whatever experiment you want to do that needs a little bit of agitation to see if you can get the indication you're looking for would be put inside there. You could put Kool-Aid in there if you wanted to, just to see what would happen. But electrons, if it has a fluid in it that can conduct electricity or at least carry a little bit of a current, electricity is going to jump from the center tube, the cathode tube, the negative, over to the positive that's running out the side of the tube. And then you put a voltage meter on that to see what's happening. Now, with cold fusion, you also want to put some sort of thermometer either on the outside or the inside, inside being obviously more accurate, but you got to be careful about where you put things. Remember, the light bulb in the center of the tiniest flashlight is actually a couple thousand degrees, but it dissipates its heat so fast that you don't burn up the room when you turn on a flashlight or your hand. So the substance they're going to put in this tube. So at this point, we've got a tube. We have a conductive material coming down the center, which we're going to get to, and a conductive rod coming out the top, both connected to wires. The substance they're going to put inside this is what they call heavy water. Now, technically speaking, heavy water is like saying pizza sauce. You know there's lots of different pizza sauces out there. Well, heavy water is more of a designation than an exact recipe. So now let's get to the substances that make up this little experiment. The rods that are going in and out are made of a metal called palladium. We'll get into the details of that. The heavy water that's in there is a deuterium-laced water. Deuterium is known for picking up within its orbit. It absorbs hydrogen particles within its orbits. So imagine having like the rings of Saturn. Let's say Saturn is the center of the atom and the rings are the outer electron cloud. Imagine there's multiple layers of the electron cloud. So there's a little bit of space between them as they have different orbits. And the hydrogen can get in there and get absorbed. And so you start having two things in one. But I don't think they've chemically actually combined. It's just this weird absorption thing. It's in the family of platinum. And palladium is actually what's in your catalytic converter. As all these toxic particles are traveling through the pipe, palladium is actually absorbing enough of the electrons to turn that into safer exhaust going out the back of your car. So when you hear people stealing catalytic converters because they want the platinum out of it, well, it's actually palladium. And it's still rare. There's only probably half a dozen places that are currently mined for palladium in the world. Palladium as a factoid is discovered in 1803. It's got a periodic table of capital P, lowercase d in the periodic table, and it's got an atomic number of 46, which means the number of components within a palladium atom is 46. So imagine you've got this beaker with this electrical current going through it. You've got palladium, which already has this catalytic converter capability of absorbing orbits of other atoms, and you've got a heavy water with deuterium in it, which is well known for absorbing hydrogen. So you actually have, and it's all at room temperature, by the way. So you've got two elements working together that have this natural capability of basically some emulation, if not outright fusion, that they can actually accomplish. Now, again, if you're doing fusion and it just makes cheesecake, no one's going to care because you can't use cheesecake as a supply for anything other than Cheesecake Factory, right? But it was this knowledge of these two things that stimulated the Fleischmann and Pons to come up with this little experiment. So there's something called the load time, which is you configure this whole thing together and you put your voltage through. I couldn't find anything about the exact voltage, but I found the formulas of this whole thing, which won't be any use to us in this conversation. But there's a load time where you actually start stimulating this whole reaction. It takes time. It takes time to create enough of this absorption, if it's going to occur at room temperature, in order for something to show itself, which in this particular case, they were looking for an increase in temperature of the heavy water that's in there to indicate, oh my gosh, at a microscopic level, due to electrons going between these two electrodes of palladium, the temperature is going to go up because it's going to start agitating the container with more movement, hence more heat. When they first start this thing, it's at 30 degrees Celsius, and it stays that way for quite a long time. Then all of a sudden, this is where the claim comes from, the container's temperature moved from 30 degrees Fahrenheit. Overnight, it turns to 50 degrees Fahrenheit, and it stays that way for quite a long time. All of a sudden, they're like, oh my gosh, okay, this is just a hint of what they're looking for. It's what we call in chemistry, like an indication that this is occurring within this little electrolyte cell. Boom. That is what drove them to announce that they had created some form of cold fusion. And it stays at 50 degrees Celsius for like 2 weeks. I mean, this was a big deal. It wasn't like it was there for a split second. Oh, did you see that? Oh, I don't know. Did you see it? So this thing was pretty ironclad. But that's just where the eyes started looking at them, right? Now, after they announced this quietly within their little community, this is when Dr. Stephen Jones gets involved, who tries to file a grant so they can build a much better device to recreate this. In the meantime, in order to get this grant really juiced up, okay, they want to publish their findings in the magazine Nature. So, of course, they've got to tell the staff of Utah University that this has happened. They get excited. They get behind it. And the way that it works was that in 1989, on March 24th, Nature magazine was supposed to get the article to then publish. Unfortunately, unbeknownst to everyone involved with the experiment, it's announced on the 23rd by the university with the footnote that it's going to be published in Nature magazine. However, the university hands it off to the Journal of Electrical Chemistry, I think was just another journal that was out there. And so then Jones getting very upset that they basically reneged on the 24th, transmits the article to Nature magazine via fax, which if you're too young to know what a fax machine is, ask your father. Now, here's the issue. If you're going to claim that you have cold fusion through this member, that experiment was pretty darn easy to set up. I mean, honestly, you could do it on your kitchen table. Then it should be easy for you to publish the schematic for how you did it. I mean, you're unequivocally going to be the creator. If you could indicate this and help other people recreate it, then you're going to get the patent for it. Meaning any engine, any motor that ends up using it, you can negotiate your royalties or sell it off in one big chunk, and you'll win a Nobel Prize and get a ton of money. So this is where I'm not sure if the scientists were trying to help the public recreate this or not trying to help the public recreate this, and then trying to further stabilize the experiment themselves. This is not written in any paper, the thing that I'm going to say here. But you can see it in your head, right? Beaker, tube going down, you know, wire going down with palladium on it, palladium wire coming out, heavy water in there, and you're simply measuring the temperature of it. There's a whole lot more to discover, isn't there? Right? It's like transmitting one letter over the internet and then just patenting the fact that you can transmit an ASCII code over the internet and then walking away and letting everyone else create TCP protocol, all the other protocols, FTP, HTTP, SMTP, POP3, all that stuff, and they're going to make the billions and trillions of dollars over your fundamental base patent. Still very valuable, but there's a whole lot more money to be made if you can metabolize it up into something bigger. Dr. Stephen Jones is off trying to get a grant for these guys to build a much better machine. So, because the experiment is so simple to explain, I'm thinking that probably it was not something they could even hide unless there's some ratio, because we're going to get into the ratios of what actually ended up occurring. Within short order of announcing this thing and in everyone failing to be able to recreate this in full, but there's a caveat there too, because back in 89, what I remember reading was that as soon as these two gentlemen said they had the indication of cold fusion, a bunch of other universities in Japan and Europe, they all came up and said, well, we've done that before with the exact same configuration. Then when visited, they suddenly figured out they actually didn't have it. When I was young in 89, 90, ingesting this stuff, I had one really fantastic contact from a gentleman who was very upper class, whose family members were subsidizing Cambridge University and what have you, and they said that black suits visited these locations and told them they didn't have the indication that they said they did, and they all backed off. And whether or not that's true or not, I don't know, but this would have been the person that would have known because their family would have probably funded those black suits, okay? But by 1990, you have 92 groups in 10 countries reporting that they had created the same sort of heat indication. That's interesting. Seems like it's pretty ironclad, right? But in short order, within a year, and some change, no one can do it anymore. It was totally shut down. All right, well, we have something, and I'm just going to mention this as a footnote. We'll get back on track here, so don't worry. We know we exist on petrodollars, right? Dollars that are valued, all European currencies, anything that's on a petrodollar is based on the sale of a barrel of oil, creating artificial demand for a particular currency, and therefore giving its value. So if we don't sell oil, someone could theorize, and it's really a control apparatus, but the next layer down of numbskulls will believe this theory. And they might feel like, well, you know, you can't do that. You'll upset the entire world. So let's just back off that whole thing. Plus, you know, you're not anywhere close to running a turbine in a jet. You have this tiny little heat indication, which is going to be 50 years away from turning anything big. That's never truly the case, right? Because once we found that we could melt silicone and create little lattices of logic gates, we had pretty powerful computers within a flash in the pants, right? So man can take the small indications and turn them into something big. But if they don't want you to pull the thread out of the sweater, they're going to keep the sweater locked away. Or they're going to tell you it doesn't exist. Over the next I would say 1889 was when this thing happened or was acknowledged, then less than 10 years, the world had put in millions of dollars worth of research from different universities, from countries like Japan to even Utah University putting $1 million in. All this money's put in. No one can create the indication anymore. And all of the journals of the world started making fun of these two guys, calling it cold fusion, confusion. Other universities just calling it pathological science. But essentially, it was gentlemen who got so married to the idea that this was possible, that something should have happened, that they imagined it and were able to lie, well, felt compelled to lie about it. Now, anyone who's in a laboratory type of science that is going to tell the world they've invented something and then publish a paper about how they did it are definitely not looking to deceive anyone, because the objective of the game is to get everybody to start doing it. This guy, Stephen Koonin of Caltech, said that the scientists were just absolutely incompetent and delusional. Wow, you know, in the 21st century, how many people get attacked when they actually are starting to change the world for good? It's everywhere, right? Well, it's not a new formula, just so you guys know. It gets very quickly to a point where trying to file patents in this region were denied because the patent office was told it was impossible. Therefore, the application itself was denied. Meaning, they could actually have proven it potentially, but when it's denied, because it's told to be factually impossible, like perpetual engines can't be applied for at the patent office in any country because it's been told to be impossible. Well, then how the hell would you know? The Wright brothers created flight of a particular manner in 1903, flew a plane 42 feet in the air and took a picture of it. And then when they tried to patent what they'd already done, they were told, well, flight like this is impossible. So we're unable to process your patent. Meanwhile, the Navy at the time was trying to create a plane so they could patent first and not have to pay a royalty to someone outside the military. It was going to cost the United States potentially millions of dollars to the Wright brothers if they were to get it first. See how this all works? It's a repeat of history, potentially. Now, why were they having such a problem? Because this has been funded again in the 21st century by companies like Google putting $10 million in it. A bunch of companies, by 2019, I should say, had spent millions of dollars trying to recreate this thing again. Well, geez, if these are delusional, incompetent scientists, and this is all cold fusion, confusion, and pathological science, then why on earth would you go back? The Navy had meetings on this in the 21st century to review the possibilities. And most of it, no surprise to anyone, was dismissed because it just, no one in the room could understand how this could possibly be capable of happening, right? Now, again, not sure why they weren't able to recreate this. However, let's go back and look at what has plagued man several times in this sort of science, okay? And this is what the Hutchison guy fell back on, although I think in the end he was just a trickster with the camera. I mean, just silly on camera hoaxes. And of course, he was also never able to recreate what he did, but he wasn't a true, well, I wouldn't say his life represents a scientific mind at this point. How many of you have fiddled around with a recipe in your kitchen? You're trying to figure out what you're going to cook. You got some garlic, you got some soy sauce, you got some meat, some peppers and whatever. Put a little salt here, a little cornstarch there, whatever. You're trying to make some meal. And you eventually create the most delicious meal you've ever had. Maybe you're mixing a drink at a bar. You're like, oh my God, what? That was amazing. Okay, how the hell did I create it? There was a joke on Cheers. I think Woody Harrelson had his character, Woody, had made some amazing drink and he couldn't remember how he did it. It was the best drink in the world. Imagine that you're putting together this experiment. Some of it's going to be 100% ironclad. Some of it's going to be sloppy in general because the electrolyte cell, or the electric cell that they put this thing in, is an open-ended beaker on the top. So you have air contamination that's possible. Thing is, you need to eliminate any accusation of how this thing could have gotten screwed up, because someone's going to be busting your balls the second you come up with the replacement for all the fuels of the world, right? You're removing the power structure from money, from the elite of the world. It's a big deal, which is why Stan Myers, gets killed eventually, right? We'll get into him in a second. Now, the heavy water, from what I understand, it has some subjective mixtures that could be a part of how the heavy water is actually created. I don't know. Probably exists, but I don't personally work with heavy water, so I don't know. There could be a certain dilution of the heavy water. It could be literally the size and quantity of the heavy water within the container versus the electrical current. Could be literally the number of atoms that are on the electrodes of palladium that are all have to be balanced. As far as I have researched with nuclear reactors, okay, from way back in the day to present day, when they build a nuclear reactor, there's all kinds of different ways you can make them. But when you just do basic rod nuclear reactors, the size of the rod, its diameter, its length, determines the proximity of how close you need to bring these things together to create the fission that you need to create the heat. Bring them too close together, boom, you get a critical heat and they all start vaporizing and you have like a Chernobyl situation, right? So everything has to be perfect. And the water that goes between those rods has to be perfectly created based on how big you make these things and how many rods you have has to be balanced. It's a massive equation of perfection to get this thing to work right. Otherwise, you're going to have either nothing or a critical level Fukushima situation, right? Again, those Fukushima was due to the safety protocols having issues, supposedly, right? It also would have to do with the exact amount of electricity that was applied to the container during its loading phase and whether or not they ever adjusted that for this 50 degrees Celsius incline in heat. Did the voltage stay the same? It should have, as far as I understand. I don't think they're applying any heat to it. But if the electricity changes, the voltage changes on these wires, well, you're then toying with how many electrons are going to be jumping between the cathode and the anode back and forth. So you could potentially load up this deuterium water, accidentally or intentionally increase the voltage. And of course, you're going to go from 30 degrees Celsius to 50, but you're not actually creating cold fusion. You're just creating more agitation using more electricity. The idea is to maintain the electricity and have it happen naturally through chemical / metal reactions. It's all chemical reactions. But so I'm not sure how utterly precise their notes were in the first experiment. What confuses me is that you have this, what looks like an absolute cover-up. The cover-up comes in several different layers. One, Fleischmann and Pons put together this paper, have this experiment, they get this indication, it goes out. Then again, you got 92 groups, in 10 different countries where a bunch of people are saying, yeah, we've seen that kind of thing before, having a problem recreating it, but we've seen it before. That's all you need. There's something here, guys. Let's keep working in this direction, okay? Then all of a sudden, everyone rescinds all of their indications saying that the water was contaminated by outside chemistry coming into the water. There's, I guess, a helium-4 that can get absorbed out of the air. I don't quite understand all that potential risk factors that are in there. But there's got to be a way to close up the container so outside contamination isn't a factor, whether or not you have to keep the electrolyte cell open, where you put it inside an outside bigger containers and use those rubber gloves to go in and modify it, or you have everything externalized once you set it up, close it out, vacuum it out, whatever you got to do, and run the experiment again. It's been 33 years since they said they did this, and we don't have a reliable place in the world, as far as I know, to go and say there's cold fusion based on the Fleischmann-Pons experiment. Now, if you know the story of Stan Myers, and I have a whole episode on Stan Myers, Meyers, who was murdered in 1998, looking at the cold fusion hoopla is sort of laughable because you don't need what they're talking about. It might be nice to have that, especially depends on, again, what Doc was doing in Back to the Future was, you know, 50 to 100 years beyond a fully recreatable Fleischmann-Pons experiment, because he's breaking down a banana into something instantaneously to be used, right? That's a whole different level of fusion. But if you just need a propellant that's going to go from some, I don't want to say inert, but just tap water turning into hydrogen and being popped inside of a piston that then can turn a turbine or whatever. I mean, you know, it's whatever your piston was for a car. A turbine, you just need to have the hydrogen fall on the fins and light it up. And you don't have to store any combustible fuel in the vehicle. You can store tap water. I mean, just imagine what distilled water would do inside a vehicle. Clean as hell. That's what Stan Myers was capable of doing. And again, just a super recap, some of you will read a little bit into him and say, oh, that's a bunch of bullshit. It's not bullshit. He did get sued in the early 90s for being a scam artist in court. What the real facts were is that he borrowed money from a guy to conduct his experiments, was unable to get everything finished by the time he's supposed to pay the guy back. In order for him to get his money back, the guy who loaned it to him, he had to walk into court and say he got scammed. He couldn't say he was getting delayed. It was easier for him to make Stan look crazy. But Stan drove a VW bus around on this engine. And when they accused him of hiding fuel on the bus, he drove a dune buggy so that everybody could see every tube, every in and out of the vehicle, and prove to themselves that he wasn't hiding fuel. And then he built the retro fit kit that you could put in your car. And apparently, we see videos of him selling this to people. There should be cars out there, some old Dodge Diplomat that's in the movie, something like that, with this kit in there. Again, the way that this engine worked was he shipped tap water or distilled water to the piston. He fractures it inside two pipes, and the fracturing process provided 75% of the pressure to push a piston down. A valve opens up, hit the hydrogen, pop the hydrogen. That was the other 25% to get it to push down. The thing that took him forever was he needed to replace the injection system, aka the old-fashioned distributor cap, so that he could talk to the pistons and keep it all nice and synchronized, so that the pistons would go up and down beautifully on a 4-cylinder, 8-cylinder, 6-cylinder, and up, right? So you'll see the videos of these network cards that he had put together that were singing to the engine and making sure it was all working right. When they asked him about using oil as a crankcase lubricant, he said, look, you know, with Teflon and those theories, you can infuse metal with a lubricant, and therefore you will not need any type of lubricant within the car. But because the oil industry created those industries, they're not about to let go of selling, you know, gajillion barrels of oil every year, right? So they don't want ever to go away, except, of course, now we're supposedly in this electrical car thing, and they've already subsidized the use of oil through all the plastics and medicines and other stuff so they can survive in those other alternate diversified markets, supposedly. And if we get away from the petrol dollar, go to gold standards or Bitcoin, electrical currencies where they can control your life, absolute, then they don't need the petrol dollar to be the mechanism to give you artificial value to your money. So there are a lot of alternatives to what these folks are trying to do. But the system is rigged against science, as we know. And now, so it used to be that when you had great science, the game was simply to chastise you out of reaching for that science because it's going to disrupt industries, disrupt the control apparatus around the world. Nowadays, in the 21st century, it is fake science that is being introduced so that you believe in crises that doesn't exist, or technology that's used to create an artificial crisis, and they blame it on something different, and getting new control apparatus on you with complete bunk science. A lot of medical regimens in the last couple of years have been based on some really heavy bunk science. A lot of the issues with the climate are based on a bunch of bunk science. I mean, if you think it's still there, you read and believe too much out of these scientists' people. And almost categorically, the people that are passing that fake crap to you have no background themselves, which is hilarious, right? And again, great scientists never have to take a bribe. horrible scientists live off bribes. And so if you wondering why a bunch of scientists agree with the fake stuff, it's because they're the crappy ones. They couldn't discover anything if you gave them every resource in the world. Well, the great scientists that say, look, this is all bunk, they don't need your money. They don't need the bribe. The fascinating thing about the theory of cold fusion, and I think that most chemists will have pings of this, if not blatant moments of epiphanies of like, wow, this could be amazing, is that we have this art of alchemy from the past. And I'll tell you again, there's a listener out there that showed me on video a sheet of gold on a piece of paper. And she said, look, my father took me out when I was younger on a full moon night and put water on a piece of paper and did this treatment with moonlight. And this is exactly what we took home. And it's 100% gold. That would be cold fusion gold. There's all these tales of people, you know, weaving gold and weaving various elements in the world. Probably not a diamond or something like that, but you never know, right? But that chemistry, if you knew all the recipes of how atoms might interact with each other, and I mean every conceivable combination of quantity, perhaps using an electrical current as a stimulant, right? Because the reason why the electricity was in that tube is you need something to agitate movement. Between those cathode and anode palladium rods, you're creating a current, a stimulant. And because of diffusion, whatever's creating the, whatever's happening between those two rods, okay, is disrupting the heavy water. Heavy water is diffusing that property around the water, converting the entire water to this loaded state. So it starts exhibiting the same attribute everywhere in the water for the most part, okay? But man has been around for a long, long time, right? And so we make mistakes, which we call serendipity, right? We have this serendipitous moment where we make a mistake. And there's probably, I don't know, a billion to one where people can't remember how they did it. I mean, they're trying to pay attention, perhaps, but because of infinity and all the different variables of a particular experiment, it's hard to keep track of it. But every once in a while, and this is almost categorically the way everything is discovered by man, every once in a while, somebody remembers. Somebody, you know, it's like when you get high, every once in a while, you have all these epiphanies, and as soon as you wake up from the being high, you can't remember a damn thing. Or you have a dream, and you have all these epiphanies. As soon as you wake up, it just fleets away from you. Well, it made sense 30 seconds ago, but it flies away from you. This is why, you know, the old analogy of a great idea is catching a butterfly and not killing it before you can actually understand what you've caught. Do I think that these two gentlemen were able to get that indication to happen? Oh yeah, for sure. What I don't quite understand is if they had the 20 degree delta between 30 degrees Fahrenheit and 50 degrees Fahrenheit for two consecutive weeks. It's 1989, there's cameras. There are still 35 millimeter cameras and there's plenty of household consumer video cameras at the time. Why they weren't filming everything that they did is, and maybe they did, and it's just not in the research, I think would be very unfortunate. The Hutchison guy, right? He is only about the final shot of what indication he had, right? Because he was filming things upside down, all this other crazy stuff, right? So you could see his rookie approach to everything, regardless if anything he did was real. And we have one of our listeners who actually met with him and spent time with him and was pretty convinced, I believe, that indeed he was fabricating whatever he said he did. Alchemy is nothing more than understanding the relationships between the elements of the universe. Potentially you could get into a compound of some sort, but it's really talking about the orbital categorizations of mass. You know, when you, and the thing is, it's funny because we're getting really close. They won't say the A word, ether, okay? But they are getting very close to basically giving it a name in the CERN Hadron Collider because all they're looking at are the ashes of a collision to figure out whether or not they've discovered something else subatomic. Okay, and of course, we did talk about this recently, and I think it's they're not really looking for what they say they're looking for. But there's nothing that's going to change the fact that when they make a collision happen, they're looking at subatomic mass that's going to get categorized. The noise is going to get filtered out. What they'll probably figure out is that the noise that they're canceling out actually has more information than what they are actually filtering into the results. But since ether has been deprecated out of science, yet is the foundation of every single electrical component that you use by the people who invented those electrical components, many of which have the components named after them, or the science and the verbs named after them, volta, ohm, Faraday. Okay. It's interesting that we have a Tesla coil, but other than a Tesla coil, Tesla wasn't very narcissistic about naming things after himself. He understood the utter brilliance of the Tesla coil and its many applications for studying electricity and basically deciphering what the world's made out of. So I think he did take the crowning jewel of his current accomplishment at the time and name it after himself. But now think about the mentality of man at this point. We think we've got to exert a tremendous amount of energy on things to get things to occur. Now, a chemist knows that's not exactly the truth. You've seen plenty of room temperature experiments with chemistry teachers that you got a beaker of room temperature chemical A and another beaker, perhaps even a powder of chemical number 2, B. Pour them together and you get a giant explosion of snaky stuff coming out, or maybe a flash or something like that. And of course, you've seen the videos where chemistry teachers light their rooms on fire. That's always really interesting. Mixing, you know, sodium and water or something. My father used to, with his cousin, who was a massive chemist, they used to take sodium and I think put it in like toothpaste or something. And then they would slingshot it into the city pool. And so kids were swimming, and all of a sudden this ball of fire would just show up on the surface of the pool. At least that's the story anyway. Something like that. But we think we've got to do this chain of events to make things occur. For instance, you know, no scientist will acknowledge a soul, for instance. Why? Because all the machines that we've ever built pretty much just detect either waves of energy or energy made out of the fabric that we understand, or particles in our universe. And so if the soul is not made of either one of those things, if the soul remains undetectable, well, then of course, you take their ego and their insecurities, and they're going to tell you that doesn't exist. And they're going to say, well, you're just making shit up. And you're like, no, I'm listening to my soul. I'm listening to the way I feel. I'm listening to my grandmother who's dead telling me she died this morning. You know, like, I am seeing real results. But then, I got it at noon that she died. She told me she died. And then 2:20 that afternoon, my mom calls me and tells me your mom died. How did I know? And I told my mom on the phone. I said, I know. She told me this morning. I didn't know she was close to death. I don't know if my mom knew. Okay. It doesn't happen for all my relatives. It just happened for that one. I'm listening to the most incredible sensory device, which is my body. And perhaps my soul-body connection, right? I don't mean to get crazy for people to come in with pure science on their hands, but we aren't very enlightened as a people within science, because science automatically has to divorce anything that man can't quite track in a machine. Energy has been the conservation of energy. Rules of life talk about how you can't have a Stainmeyer's engine, which was confirmed at Oxford University. Half an amp of energy going in was creating 650 amps, I believe it's the calculation, of combustible hydrogen out of tap water. That's not supposed to be possible. But that's idiotic, isn't it? I'll give you a silly analogy, but it would apply to that. What was Stainmeyer's doing? He was vibrating tap water in a very specific manner using conductive tubes, okay? One inside the other, like kind of a pipe organ type thing, with one pipe organ pipe inside of another, like a Russian doll, just one inside the other. And he was just sending out a giant fracturing beam that popped a bunch of hydrogen out of that thing. And they were saying, you can't get that much hydrogen out with so little current going in. As if somehow there related to each other. It's absurd. Bigger the pipe, the more hydrogen he created. The smaller the pipe, the less hydrogen he created, because it's the contact point between the pipe and the other pipe, creating that induction across the two that was shocking hydrogen, which is part of water, H2O, okay? The analogy I'm going to give you is like this. When you build a house of cards, right? How much does it take to knock it down? Well, if you do it right, not that much. Pop a card off from the bottom, and you could have the whole thing come down. Put up a bunch of dominoes the size of a parking lot or the size of a gymnasium floor. Well, if you built it right, how much energy does it take to knock every single one of those things down? It's a chain reaction. Ping with my finger and every single one. 10 million dominoes can fall down because it's a chain reaction. It's funny about fission and the theory of an atomic bomb. It's pretty much the same thing. A small core implodes, creating this reaction. And look at the size of the bomb that comes out. So if you took the C4, the dynamite that's at the core before plutonium was the methodology, and just popped it without the right compression, without the right, you know, volleyball cut on it, and just open it up and blow it up, it'll be a decent-sized explosion. But put it all together in that configuration, alchemy, and pop it, and you get this gigantic bomb, supposedly, right? Even if it's the tower of TNT, the old silo explosions they used to do, or the igloo ones they used to do. Well, geez, the bomb that comes off that thing is so much bigger than the material that's there because of the way it's configured. So this idea that Stan Myers couldn't do what he did, he was just knocking out the first domino, man. He was knocking out the first card and the tower of cards, creating a chain reaction. He was taking the valence of a conductive tube and a valence of another conductive tube and creating an anode-cathode relationship between the two and pulverizing the hydrogen in between. Dozens and dozens and dozens of people have built such Stan Myers engine, at least one tube with one inside. And there's videos of them putting in a 5-gallon bucket that's 1/3 full, and they just have the electrodes coming in, and they stick it in the water. And right where the tube is in, a bubble comes out, hits the air, and pops on fire. Dozens and dozens of videos of this. So cold fusion, for me, it's interesting. Even if these two gentlemen had come up with this indication, had no problem sharing it with the rest of the world, and had done all of their experimentation properly, meaning they tracked every variable that would make it easy to recreate, even here in 2022, you know, I don't know how far we would have been able to take the technology. But we're at a weird crossroads right now, which is what I'm going to finish up on. We've got a bunch of people guilt-tripping society for choices that society didn't make. Like I said at the beginning of the episode, we didn't choose any of the power sources that we're currently dependent on, right? We didn't. But they want us to pay for their new infrastructure, their new power grid, and then they're going to charge us for every unit of power that we buy from the system that our tax dollars paid for, because we've been guilt-tripped into some green movement from choices that they made. Again, I didn't choose any of that stuff. None of your grandparents ever choose any of that stuff, unless you're a Rockefeller or a Rothschild or a Habsburg or a Windsor. You didn't choose any of that stuff. So they want to get us off of petrol cars and get us into electric vehicles. All right. There's the video going around where they ask the woman who was selling an electric car, well, where does the power come from to power this car? And she goes, well, it comes from that little plug on the wall right there. Having no clue the life cycle of how the power is created, right? We are going to need a bunch of new inventions, and we're going to need them before 2030, or what is it, 2035, when Europe says you're not going to be able to buy a petrol car anymore. Can you believe that? 13 years from now, if you live in Europe, you're not supposed to be able to buy a petrol car? Okay, well, you know, we're getting a little bit better with some of these batteries, but all those videos we've seen for 30 years where some dude invents an amazing battery and the oil company buys it and shelves it? Well, we're going to have somebody barf up a battery that can get us, you know, 1,000 miles on the charge. Someone did the due diligence on what it actually costs to charge up an electric car, and you're paying more per mile on a lot of these electric vehicles than you would for gas. But they're selling you a bill of goods because a lot of these cars can fill up at these charge stations without identifying themselves. So it's all free. Okay. You cease drilling oil in the world? Like I said, when you watch Jeb, the billionaire, or the millionaire, whatever, shot his gun and the Texas tea starts popping out of the ground, most of us as kids were like, what the hell are you talking about? He shot a gun at the ground and it crude oil came out of the ground? What the hell is this story? This is ridiculous. Oil doesn't come out of the ground like that. Truth of the story is, it does come out like that when you don't pump it, because it's right on the very edge. And in a lot of areas in the world, crude oil will bury cities if you don't keep pumping it. We had a air show last year, and it was going for Saturday. But of course, someone had to sabotage it because we're a conservative county. He said there was an oil spill overnight, so Sunday was canceled. People were surfing down there on Sunday, saying there's no oil here. And sure enough, by like 6 o'clock, when the air show would have been over, here it comes. It's starting to touch the pier. And there's a big cleanup crew there. In fact, I think it's still down there. All right. Well, my buddy, who's 73, who's lived here for 45 years, he said, you know, when I went down and surfed in the 70s, he goes, you'd go out to Huntington Beach and you'd have oil all over your legs. People were surfing in oil. And it was only worse the further you went back. And we have famous, famous surfers in the 50s, 60s, 50s, some in the 40s. So they were all surfing in oil because it comes out of the ground naturally. And it comes out of the ground forever and ever and ever and ever. It is not a fossil fuel. Remember, all life stops at 16,000 feet when you go down to the ground. But oil goes down there forever. It's methane gas crushed into crude oil. It's all carbon and hydrogen. And you refine crude oil, you're simply boiling off the carbon binders to get to higher and higher octane fuel. We are going to need to keep pumping oil for some reason. Otherwise, our coasts, you know, cities like Houston would be probably a foot deep in a tar pit. All these places, when we found them, go look at old photographs of the first drilling in Texas. There's black seas out there. Black, stinky seas. My buddy just told me tonight, the same guy told me, he goes, look, there was a house in Newport Beach that exploded because it had crude oil right underneath the house and the vapors were coming up, methane, and it finally blew up. And so they had to tap it to get rid of it. Okay. So by lying to ourselves over and over and over about all the fundamentals of how this universe works to protect the people that basically enslave us, we're going to be in for a big surprise in the end, you know? And that would be something we'd have to resolve if Stan Meyer's engine was used too. Stan Meyer's engine resolves all need for power. If we would wake up and get back into the Wardenclyffe Tower that Tesla was going to build, built part of it and never got it working. He had a small one. But if we were to have his engine, then we're using Stan Meyer's engine potentially to energize, okay, this infinite power source through a Tesla coil to the core of the Earth, drag all that out of the ether and the core of the Earth, power the Wardenclyffe Tower, and then every device that's electronic at least could have power. So you're stuck in an earthquake under some rubble, and your cell phone never loses power because the Wardenclyffe Tower is transmitting it directly to your phone. You want to fly a jet in the air? Well, that's where Stan Meyer's engine comes in. Water in the tank. If you're nervous, we could put some jet fuel in there just in case. But we're popping hydrogen directly onto the turbines. Good to go. Good to go. Same, obviously, for cars and whatever else we're doing. Byproduct? Steam. No pollutants of any kind. Like I said, in the 21st century, there's people looking at coal fusion again. Geez, if it's just delusional, pathological science, then why would you even get involved with that? You've already classified this as absolute lunacy. It's probably because there's something there. There's probably a lot of things that are there. According to the gentleman I spoke to, for a good part of 2003, there's a lot of recipes for getting this done, many of which, probably the majority of which, most of us have never seen a video on. We never read an article on it, never read a paper on it, because the people that discovered it were exterminated. And I've told the story before, and I'll button it on because we've got a couple minutes here. A friend of mine had figured out how to use sound waves inside the shape of an egg. And using a particular sound wave of a particular atomic element within this confines of an egg shape, he was able to create an element out of pretty much sound waves. Not a lot. He did a lot of work trying to create a lab. He was in Arizona at the time with two other friends of mine who are very, very trustworthy. And they had this guy following him around in a white car. He called himself Simon. He wore a white suit, white car. First time he met this dude, the car's parked out in front of his house. He noticed that there was this all-white car. And he finds a guy in his back porch sitting in one of his chairs with the big notebook, just sitting there. And of course, you got an invader in your yard. You're going to go ask him what the fuck he's doing in your yard, right? And the guy was super cool. He said, "Have a seat. We should talk." Starts going through this binder and showing him tons of photographs of himself, all of his research paperwork, which he said at that point was only written down hand notes and books inside his house, a few at work. All of it was scanned into his this guy's notebook. Now, Simon was witnessed by a girlfriend who has absolutely no vested interest in lying, and a very close mutual friend between the two of us who also has absolutely, who was actually military, by the way, and actually high clearance, has no need to tell a tall tale because the guy's awesome by himself, you know. I worked with this guy for about 2 years because he came to me and he goes, "How the hell do I get this information out so that I don't get whacked? Because I'd like to actually experiment on this and build a laboratory." He moves from Arizona back to Kansas, ends up raising $2 million from a guy in Europe. The guy sends him the money and he gets locked up by Homeland Security, who then notifies him, "Oh, well, that guy you're getting the money for has a shady background. We're not letting you have this cash." The buddy abandons everything, of course, because he's just like, "Look, man, I'm not going to go anywhere with this. They're obviously on top of me. And I don't need to die anytime soon." So we published all the papers online on a website that went out for probably about 2 or 3 years, and then we just pulled the plug on the whole thing. But we did circulate this information to a bunch of folks that do this type of research. I never heard it come back from anywhere, but who knows? It's very similar to some of the units that people in Africa have made that use sunlight and to create water and what have you. This could create anything that you could, that you would need, an element of some sort. So what's interesting is I've got some very trustworthy people who have told me either black suits were sent out to tell people they didn't have the results that they had. And quite frankly, history, even in Wikipedia, supports all this. Again, 92 groups in 10 countries said they had heat variations in the same sort of experiment that Fleischmann and Pons did. And then all of a sudden, 92 groups, they don't have it, and it's dead. Millions of dollars invested, but nothing can come out because the people that are put on top of the millions of dollars aren't really either talented enough to pull off the experiment or probably handpicked to make sure it doesn't occur, you know? But again, in 2022, there's a few tens of millions of dollars rolling around, one of being Google, looking for it. Again, this would need a lot of work to become a formidable source of energy. It doesn't sound like that's actually necessary given Stan Meyer's thing. But there's different types of energy, right? Perhaps, I don't know. Perhaps Stan Meyer's engines is better for big engines, and this other stuff's better for smaller engines. Stan Meyer's is not a room temperature solution. So if you needed a room temperature solution in some microscopic component, maybe that's where the cold fusion stuff becomes more useful, more viable. So I just want to thank the person on YouTube for coming up with that suggestion. Your comment's so far down on my software, I can't find it anymore, but thank you so much. I needed to research this stuff. I am researching some other stuff that was supposedly submitted by a gentleman that was a mentor of Tesla himself. And it's fascinating research that involves a completely alternate theory of all atomic matter, but it's all ethereal based. And it talks about the relationship between electrical energy that is trying to become mass, meaning slow down and become trapped in a current, and then magnetism that is always on the opposite, an equal reaction, the opposite direction to undo its existence. And so there's a spiral configuration and a vibrational chart that accounts for all elements in the periodic table. Very, very interesting stuff. It's going to take me a while to sift through that. Anyway, if you haven't been to deepthoughtsradio.com, please go. You'll notice a lot of cosmetic differences for the episodes, getting juicier thumbnails. I'm getting a few questions about that, so I thought I would address that real quick with you guys before we close off here. What I've done is take the last like 10 to 15 episodes and sex them up. So there's someone scrolling down the channel, they're seeing really nice thumbnails. But primarily I'm going to the highest viewed episodes in the entire show and giving them brand new thumbnails. I still need to roll them over to the season one remastered, but Rumble has everything on it. So I'm definitely keeping Rumble updated, BitChute updated, which has them all as well. And then obviously sprinkling them into YouTube. The website as well is getting a huge upgrade in the thumbnails. And I realized just recently that one of my updates to the database shifted all of the thumbnails to really small, square, truncated thumbnails. So they're not, they don't look good on the website. But it usually relies on YouTube's thumbnail for the front page. So you should be good if you're doing search results. Just remember, there's a category list on the website, deepthoughtsradio.com. So if you dig episodes of a particular type, they're all there. I'll tell you what, I just researched on YouTube the playlist that I have on YouTube, because usually everything's in a playlist on YouTube. Science is the number one playlist on YouTube. So it even beats out space programs, I think is what I call it. On the website, we've got moon hoax, NASA, UFOs, aliens, all separated. And they're definitely showing up in different categories. So one video might show up in different categories, but there's, technically speaking, 698 episodes out there as of before the last two episodes I will have released. So we should hit the 700 mark. We've done probably 730 episodes, but I've redone some. Some just get old. I'm going to be taking out all the old chaos reports from the past because they're just pointless. They're old current events, and I don't think anyone's going to go back and listen to what I thought of, you know, April 2021. So I'm just going to pull those out of circulation. So don't think that someone has censored us. We're just doing that to ourselves. Anyway, it has audio, videos, all social media, most of them independent, free speech zones, all new remastered season one, a store with some cool shirts. And again, for those of you digging on the Really t-shirt with the Apollo lunar lander on the front, thank you so much. Apparently, we've had some amazing results from listeners walking up in malls with families that have NASA shirts on, and they see our Deep Thoughts Radio shirt, and they're just, their faces, I guess, are just priceless. So if you want to stimulate some conversation with like-minded people, the shirts actually help you, without saying anything to someone else, have someone come up to you and say, I'm with you, let's talk. Or, how dare you get rid of my glass tower? For those of you who support me on PayPal and Patreon, thank you so much. Again, on Patreon, you get the audio file the second that it burns out of my editor. And it takes like particularly, potentially a day to get the episode uploaded and mastered up to at least 1080p before I release it. We're also putting up there the old show I had on the radio here in LA called MK Ultra Radio. And there's, again, 100 episodes of that with 26 additional episodes of Real or Bullshit. So kind of funny. It's my buddy and I, Kyle, doing a show. So if you want access to those, they're also up there. Plus, we get a private chat that's all nice and quarantined away from people who don't like hearing the truth. So anyway, take care of yourself and someone else, and I'll see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over and out.